This podcast details true crime cases. It contains adult themes and may contain descriptions of violence. It is not intended for children. Listener discretion is advised.
Thanks for joining us today for this special December episode of Once Upon a Crime. As you guys know, in December, what I do is I bring on some special guests and we just have a fun conversation about something we're all maybe talking about or watching or something in the news. And I have a few this time. Usually I only have one, so this is going to be extra special. I have not done this before, Once Upon a Crime, so hopefully it'll be a little holiday treat for everybody. But first of all, you guys know Lorena. Lorena's here with me. Say hi, Lorena.
Hello, everyone.
So Lorena will be here joining me. The other special guests that we have today are Tim and Lance from Crawl Space Podcast. And they are the ones that brought up the idea of talking about this. And I really am interested to find out what it is that they were so, you know, like interested to talk about with this series, because there's so much that can be said. So welcome, Tim and Lance. I'm really, really happy to have you guys here.
Thank you, Esther and Lorena. How are you both doing?
Doing well, doing well.
Good. So, pretty good.
Such a pleasure to be invited on your show.
Yeah, Crawl Space, we like to say, is where crime and culture intersect, and case with the Watcher is kind of right along the lines of something that we like to cover, that is creepy AF, I'll say. And it's also a series on Netflix, so it kind of checks two boxes for us.
We're going to be talking about a case that I covered briefly, gosh, way back in 2017. And has become kind of a thing now, because there is a series that came out on Netflix. Of course, we know Netflix, everything blows up on Netflix, right? So people have been talking about this series, and I really didn't even know that it had anything to do with this case that I had covered way back when, until somebody brought it to my attention. And I was like, really? So I had to take a look at it.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
So question, I'm sure you guys did, but did you guys know about the actual real Watcher case before it became a series on Netflix?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I listened to the episode back in 2017. Okay. And there was an article that came out like right around that time as well. But yeah, kind of familiar with it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, so definitely familiar.
To catch everybody up on this case, I mean, I know a lot of people have watched this series or are watching the series right now because it just recently came out, correct? I think it was maybe in October. Yeah, on Netflix. But so just to tell you a little bit of background about the actual case, because that's a good question, Lorena. Maybe people don't know that this was something that was, I mean, it says it at the beginning, I think, maybe that it's a true story. I can't remember. But yes. Of course, you know, what does that really mean? You know,
yeah, a lot of horror stories or horror films say that, like based. Right. Yeah, exactly.
But how closely do they, you know, adhere to the actual story? So we'll talk a little bit about that. Just to give you a little summary. And this, I'm actually going back to my original story that I, and there has been, I believe, a couple of updates maybe, But this is story is all about the infamous Watcher House, and this is located in Westfield, New Jersey. In 2014, a couple named Derek and Maria Broaddus purchased this house, beautiful home, for $1.3 million. It was a six-bedroom, four-bath, colonial-style house, and they felt they had found their dream home, just like the couple in the series. But not long after, they started getting a series of really creepy letters, and the letter writer was saying that he was stalking them, basically, watching everything that they were doing. They began receiving these letters, and again, this is the true part of it. They began receiving these letters, the first one only 3 days after they purchased the home, not after moving into the home, like we'll talk about the series shows. Just to give you an idea of the first letter, and I believe they stuck pretty closely to the actual words from the letters in the show, if I recall correctly. But the first letter started out like this. My grandfather watched the house in the 1920s and my father watched in the 1960s. It's now my time. I have been put in charge of watching and waiting for its second coming. Do you need to fill the house with the young blood I requested? Once I know their names, I will call to them and draw them out to me. And he started saying more things that were they felt threatening to their children. That they were going to know, they wanted to know who was in what bedroom, but they would find out and they would know, and then they could plan things like that, that made it really, of course, parents of children very nervous. So they continue to arrive talking about secret hiding places in the house. Have they found out what's in the walls yet? I mean, think about this. This is something that would cause anybody pause. Now, one of the things that is different is they had not moved into the house before they got these letters, correct, Lorena? And how did that play out for this story?
Like you mentioned, they had received the first letter 3 days after closing on the house. So not even moving in. And yet somehow the watcher knew that they had kids. Like, was he watching during the open house? Was he watching? That's what's the creepiest part of the whole thing. In the show, the letter comes like once the family is moved in and everything, and he sees that there's obviously kids in the house once they're there in the show. But also, another thing to debunk from the show, these kids in real life were young. I think the youngest was what, like 6 months or something? But then there was three kids and they were all young, whereas in the show they're teenagers, and yeah, they're still young, but like, I don't know, as a toddler, of a parent of a toddler, I think that would be, I mean, the whole thing is creepy, especially in the show, but like for like young children, I think that would be even more creepy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And he did sign the letters, the Watcher. I forgot to say that he signed them the Watcher, which is why they call this the Watcher House. So, yeah.
And in the first letter, he did not know their name yet. He didn't refer to them by their last name or their first names or anything. Whereas we come to find out in the second letter, he knows all of their names, and he names them in order of when they were born, and he knows the mom and dad's name, everything. So how did he learn? So creepy.
Pretty creepy. And
he was the real estate agent.
Well, apparently the first letter was sent before the sale was even public.
Oh, yeah. So the house didn't actually even go up for sale. Like, this must have been like a private sale. They definitely probably had it, you know, had it in with the real estate agent. She probably, or he, they, whoever it was, they probably, you know, showed them the house privately. So was he watching before it even went up for sale? Was there even a for sale sign on the lawn? Did anybody know? That's what makes it so creepy. The real story.
No.
Makes it
creepy. Apparently never a for sale sign on the lawn. Yeah.
Yeah. So these people, you know, before they, because they weren't going to move in right away anyway, because they were doing renovations on the house. So they weren't going to move in right away. They actually ended up putting in about $100,000 worth of renovations in this home that had originally been built in 1905. So it did need some upgrades and things like that. But that was one of the things that the real letter writer complained about, was, you know, doing any kind of changes to the house. So that was part of it. They reported these letters as threats to the Westfield Police Department, and an investigation was opened, but the Broaddus's were actually too frightened to move into their new house. They actually never lived in that house. So that's completely different from the show, which of course would have made it a non-show. So totally. We have to get them in the house. So, but there are some other things that we'll talk about that as we go. But what do you guys, what was it about this that you decided, hey, I want to watch this show? And what did you, what is your general impressions just at the top of this here?
A couple of great actors are in the show, and the premise for the show on Netflix is great. And I would even say the first couple of episodes are pretty good. They're dramatically compelling, I would call them. And then the show sinks like a stone in water. It's unbelievable how the rest of the episodes end up sort of unraveling. But initially, it's just a great hook for a dramatic and creepy show.
It really is. And there's only like a few items when I am reading something or watching something that's in the suspense, horror, like thriller genre that really get me, like get under my skin. And the idea that someone is invading your private space and you don't know who they are is definitely one of those. And that's the hook that Tim just mentioned. Like you haven't even moved a single item into your new home. You've barely had time to tell your friends, and all of a sudden you're getting a note that is like so eerily, it's almost friendly at first, right? And then it gets into this, you know, these like threatening tones to it. But I just like totally dig that concept. And the story, even the real life story, like I just love that concept. It's terrifying. And it's, yeah. It makes you want to see what's next, what's coming up, what's around that corner. And, you know, but then, like Tim said, the Netflix series, my God, it's like riding the insane horse to the burning barn.
If they're deviating from the truth, why not just send more letters to the fake family in the show? Like when the letters were sent, I was riveted. Totally riveted. There was three letters in the series that were sent, much like real life. I think there were three letters that were sent. Mm-hmm. But if they're fictionalizing this anyway, I don't understand why they limited it to three when it was seven or eight episodes on the series. They could have easily had like five or six letters. Like I don't understand what they were doing there.
I was just gonna say off of what Lance was saying about that whole idea of moving into a new place. And I really didn't think about that, but if you kind of think about how that feels when you move into a new place and you're unfamiliar with your surroundings, the first thing you want to do is find a way to make yourself feel comfortable there. So, you know, you bring in maybe some of the things that are most important to you, maybe hang up those pictures first on the wall or put in that, you know, comfy couch that you love, and then you little by little try to meet your neighbors. And so you feel comfortable. I mean, we've all been there, right? But I was thinking about when you're saying that, like if you move in and right away there's something that feels off, like then what do you do? Like how do you kind of reconcile yourself? Like, oh no, it's okay, I'll be all right here, you know? Like right away you're like, yeah, I don't know if I like this at all. And how do I, but you've already committed, you're already there, right? So that I didn't really think about that. I think one of the things in the show and one of the things, even in the articles of the real story, people always talk about the money they invested.
Yeah.
They invested so much money at this very expensive home. They put all this money in renovations, which of course is a huge investment, kept them tied to this place. But even if it wasn't that, even if you just rented a place and put down a deposit, you know what I mean? It's still an investment of your time, of your energy, of, you know, you're committing yourself to something. So that was a good point. I just wanted to mention that.
No, for sure. Yeah, a mortgage is, gosh, forever. So could you imagine a $1.5 million home?
Yeah.
And you're committing to that mortgage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, as soon as I started watching it, I think it was the second episode where there was a scene with like a phone call. It's like, already thinking in my head, I think they blended two different cases together. And then as the series go on, we find out that they totally did. So there definitely is another case that was blended in with the Watchers series. But there's definitely a third one, too. I don't know if you guys caught the third one. by chance?
Well, I'm not sure. I might my oh, my might second one might be your third one. I don't
oh,
know.
That's true, actually.
My twist. Fourth one might be your first
fourth?
One.
Oh snap. No. Okay. I gotta add to my notes.
before we go into that, I want you guys to just talk a little bit about the neighbors they put into, because that's from the jump from the first episode. These neighbors, I would see these neighbors and say, oh hell no. I'm out. Yep. These people, I'm locking my door, I'm closing my blinds. These people are weird. So what did you guys make of that?
I think it's classic Ryan Murphy, like in someone else's hands, like this, it like we're going to give it a lot of, we can swear on this, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
We're going to give the show a lot of shit today. And, but it's in a fun way, because in anyone else's hands, it would just be bad. But in Ryan Murphy's hands, it's fun bad. And those neighbors are part of that like fun badness of it. Like, yeah. And they are a stereo. Every one of them is one stereotype of a horrible neighbor, and you just spread them out amongst multiple horrible neighbors. And I feel like when they're shooting it or writing it or doing rehearsals, I feel like Ryan Murphy's like up a notch.
Yeah. No, take up, it up, up just notch. A little bit more.
a little more. What can you do now? I love it.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, that couple was great.
Oh, yeah, the couple.
So creepy.
When, what's the dad's name? He was like, okay, Professor McGonagall. I just lost it. With the neighbor with the braids. But no, in real life, there was a really eccentric family in the neighborhood that they had as a neighbor. They were the Langfords. They came under suspicion. The real family in real life hired a private investigator, and they ran a background check on the family, but they didn't find anything. But they were just an eccentric family that in a neighborhood. I feel like each neighborhood has a family like that, right?
at least one.
It wasn't Jasper Winslow, though, right?
Oh, no. It wasn't a Professor McGonagall situation. Or maybe it was. I don't know.
Yeah, so Mia Farrow plays Pearl Winslow, who she's like the hippy dippy neighbor next door. And man, she looks completely different. And she's just one of these, you're like, I don't know. To me, she'd be the neighbor from hell. That one would be the neighbor from hell for me, because she just, first of all, she's just so judgy. And she's, it's there's something about her that just creeps me out in this character. So even more than, you know, Jasper, her son?
I think it's
Jasper.
Her brother.
Yeah. Was it her brother?
Oh, I don't know.
Her brother's son.
Her brother's son. Might as well have been, right?
Yeah.
He's like, take it up a notch.
Yeah. The casting of Mia Farrow led me to look in her direction as far as a suspect in the show, because Mia Farrow famously in Rosemary's Baby, and horror creators like to use actors from old horror movies in their new thing to sort of make a connection there. And usually I look there as like a possible suspect or something. That's where I was looking.
Mm-hmm. And then Mitch and Moe, I love Richard Kind anyway. I think he's so funny. And he just played such a quirky character on this as well, but creepy as hell. And then Moe, you know, comes across as, oh, here's some cookies. And, you know, but in 2 seconds, you're like, there's something off about this woman.
Who played her? I always forget her name.
Margot Martindale is her name.
Yes. Yeah. One of those fantastic actors who can do that with their body language. And just a slight shift in their facial expression where she'll use the character's words against them. And it's like so like menacing the way she'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It starts off were they
like
the ones
kind
that were
devious?
Right. Yes. In a second. You're right. Just in a second. Like she's super nice. And then her face just changes completely. And it's like, oh, shit. Harvesting the arugula over the fence or something. Yeah. And then he's like, get off my property. Oh, that. Oh, okay. Now he's already, first of all, you can tell these neighbors are creepy as hell already or weird or something. And then right away, he's going to start a problem like get off my lawn. So I'm like, okay, that's not smart, dude. But I don't know. That was very odd.
It seemed like to me right away, like even with the setup, with the letters, like you're taking control away from these homeowners, any control whatsoever. Can't control who your neighbors are. You can't stop these letters. You don't even know who it is. So in a way, that's unnerving too, knowing that you kind of have just no options.
Yeah, that's one of my biggest fears of purchasing a home is the neighbors. I've been super lucky with great neighbors of all in all the places that I've lived, but I couldn't imagine having to commit to purchasing a home and having terrible neighbors. Gosh, that would just be like the worst nightmare. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, so we have all these people, they set this up, and what you find out right away is, well, at least I got a sense right away. I think these homeowners were a little bit naive, even though they're supposed to be from New York City. They're pretty naive. It's like everybody seemed like there were secrets. And the second you met them, and it was like, there's nobody in your corner, guys. You guys need to do your own homework. Oh, we need a private detective. So the detective, the chief of the police department there, who's not helpful at all, says, oh, I've got somebody for you. Why would you take that recommendation? Why would you go to New York City and get a real private detective? It was that way all the way through. I'm like, come on, every way through.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today. Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
One theme that I really loved in a frustrating way was how if a little bit more communication had happened between family members and even between the neighbors, and people didn't just skip that one thing, like the automatically assuming that something happened, so we're not going to talk about it because we've assumed that it's going to that it happened, like when the videotape of the woman getting into bed with the husband. It was just assumed that he like did something with her. No one ever like actually thought about it for a second to be like, but you never woke up and she must have left at some point. So right. The issue isn't you being like having an affair. The issue is where did she come from?
Right.
Like, I totally agree.
Instead, the wife's like, I'm out of this marriage.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm pretty sure the girl probably just disappeared at a certain point if you kept watching the video.
Yeah.
Like, mystery solved. Yeah.
Solve,
that's actually,
yeah.
That's no one point. Asked.
When does the video cut off? Because you see her get it, and then it's like,
it's
how long
never
does
addressed.
I have questions.
Yes.
I have many questions. Yes.
Well, and if they wanted to continue with that plot line, it would have been just as easy to have him kind of in like, let's say he goes to bed and he's upset and he has a couple of drinks and he goes to bed, he kind of passes out, and then a woman comes in and he maybe messes around with her and then he like snaps out of it, you know, and maybe she kind of looks like his wife or something, you know, like they could have had some interaction between the two to maybe explain right. that a little or helped like move the plot along. And that would give his wife a little bit more incentive to be like this. We have to separate. The marriage is on the rocks. But there was, they didn't even talk about what happened beyond what we saw in the video.
Yeah.
The hanging right. Chad. Yeah. What even like this? So that was a ghost. We're left to believe that was a ghost. I guess.
Or they were going through the tunnels.
Yeah. So did you guys finish the series?
I did. I forget. Yeah. I guess you're right that this was someone going through the tunnel.
Well, we spoiler alert, listeners, if you guys haven't watched the show, episode is going to be filled with spoiler alerts, or spoilers.
We'll put tags in there so you guys can fast forward if you don't want to hear this.
At the end of the series, like in the very last like 5 minutes of the last episode, the private detective comes out and says it was all her. She hired a girl to come through. But then in the very like last 2 minutes, the daughter is like, yeah, actually, no, it didn't happen. So what we think happened was somebody that the private investigator hired put her through an area where the cameras weren't facing and had her come in and out that way. But that's we find out that's not true. I know. Yeah. They were going the last episode, I fell asleep like 3 times watching the last episode because it was just it was like, okay, come on. Like, can we just
wrap it up one way or the other?
Yeah.
And why would the security kid put like the reason he put a camera in the guy's bedroom is absolutely ridiculous because why did he say he wanted to make sure that he wasn't the one writing the letters?
Yeah.
Why would he write him in his bedroom from that angle?
Yeah.
And then when the kid blackmails the dad, he gets him fired from his job.
And then they're buddies later.
Yeah. And then they're
bizarre.
Here, have some wine.
Yeah. Smell it first.
I'll give you my blessing to marry my daughter. Sure.
Yeah. But no, in real life, I don't know if you guys saw this in one of the updated articles, Derek brought us, he did admit to being a depressed wreck, you know, when trying to figure out what to do with this new home and how to protect his family. So yes, I think they did do a really good job of like portraying the type of stress that the character was under. Could you imagine, you know, your daughter acting out? I don't know how old the daughter was in real life, but who knows? I'm sure in real life, these kids probably were like irritable. Like, what's going on? Are we going to move? Are we not moving? I'm sure they had the conversation of like, you guys are going to switch schools, but now you're not. So I can't imagine the type of stress that it did have on the real family. I know we're laughing about it, but gosh, I can't imagine the poor guy. There were times throughout the show that you do feel bad for him.
At least they didn't have a ferret, though, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they did.
what did the real estate agent call it? A muskrat?
Muskrat, yeah.
She was too much. Oh, I forget what she was on, but she's her name is Jennifer Coolidge. She played Karen, the real estate agent, and she's great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's great. She's in Legally the White Blonde. Lotus.
Oh, yeah. She's in White Lotus? I didn't know that.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
If you ever read anything about her and what she like, how she kind of like got depressed during COVID, I think. And she was talking about how she didn't think she was going to be able to like work anymore. And but she did it in her way where it was like sort of self-effacing, like very funny. She was like, you know, how many pizzas can you eat a day? Like she was really interesting in her description of, I think, the way a lot of people fell into a rut during COVID. So if you ever get a chance to read about her reaction to that, it's pretty interesting and funny.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, the reaction from the characters in the Netflix series, I thought, like, you know, the stress was real. The feeling of them being stressed, like, I got that. But the effects of the stress on them, I thought was kind of absurd at times. Like the dad wrote one of the letters in the fictional show,
mm-hmm.
completely insane. Mm-hmm. Now I know that is one of the theories in the real life case. But in the Netflix series, more than one source did not write those letters, and it was stupid to assume that could have even been possible, that it's in the same voice, it's the same type, it's just, you know what I mean, it linguistically wouldn't match up, and it was absurd.
Well, and especially in the show, there was a history of letters that came in before, but in real life we know that only one letter ever existed before the Broaddus family moved in. So obviously if there's a line of letters that came in, it's got to be a neighbor that's been there forever. And especially a neighbor in like close proximity, like they were in the show. I would have immediately tried to get a search warrant, but of course it's a dramatized show, so they wouldn't be able to. Yeah. There would be nothing there. But yeah, totally a neighbor from the beginning. And then as we come to find out, the tunnels, and then yeah, totally was Professor McGonagall.
I really enjoyed the fact that somehow they managed to even work in QAnon. This whole thing.
Yes.
You noticed that. Yeah. That was Mo. That was Mo saying, okay, yeah. I love she's
drinking the blood of children.
Yes.
Oh, right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Sucking the blood of children through his fingers or whatever.
This is why that show is like so fun bad, because as we're talking about it, I had totally forgotten about the burnt out actor or talent agent who turned into an actor. Like his character was so off the wall. It's so out of left field. Oh yeah. Great stuff.
And that's the part I was just gonna get to, because we have to talk about John Graff, because that's a whole other actual true crime story that they threw into the works, which I thought was a great way to do that, which made it really interesting for me, even though, you know, it's total bullshit, but it was fun because you have this whole side story about this murder that it supposedly happened in the house that nobody talks about, not even the detective, but yet he gives them the whole case file, which makes no sense, right? Oh, we don't know anything about it, but here's his box. Why don't you go look through that and find out for yourself? Like, okay, that makes sense. But it all has to do with, you know, he comes in the house and there's supposedly a building inspector. Again, the assumption, like you were saying, Lance, is just an assumption that this guy's a building inspector or something. He doesn't even know who he is. He just starts talking to him and his name, you know, calls himself John Graff. And it turns out the entire story he tells is the John List story, which is the story out of, you know, another home, not this home, another home that where it was a family annihilator case. And it's funny because it's one of the, we covered this in the first season of Once Upon a Crime. And this today is still one of our most frequently downloaded episodes is the John List case. So it's a really interesting case. It was actually the first case that was featured on America's Most Wanted. And this is how he was caught. I think it was 17 years later. Where, you know, he goes in, the parts that they told that were really stuck true to the story were the fact that he bought this house he really couldn't afford. He had this family, his mother, who was a total bitch, which is true, lived with them and was on him all the time. Like, oh, you need to get a better job and ask for a raise and da, 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 and all this kind of stuff. And the guy was just a mousy kind of a bookkeeper type dude, accountant, whatever. Never spoke up for yes, dear, yes, mother kind of guy. Right. So he ends up losing his job, can't pay for this house. He was also very religious. Like they say, and this guy was very, you know, religious. He's talking scripture and stuff like that as he's talking to this guy saying you should go to church and blah, blah, blah. And, he comes home, you know, comes and the way that they talk about how he, carried out the murders is spot on exactly what happened in the case. So even to the fact that he goes to get the son from the basketball game and brings him home and he's the last one shot. And then he goes on the run and he leaves. But they, you know, this one, of course, they say he was never caught, or they didn't know, I guess, that he was just gone. The creepy detail about that, that they did kind of talk about, was he turns the radio on or he has music playing or something like that. He did do that because this home had one of those intercom systems where you could turn something on and it would go throughout the house. And the house was pretty much empty because he really couldn't afford furniture, because when he bought this house, they dumped everything. They really didn't have much furniture. So it was pretty, you can still see pictures of it to this day. And it was pretty empty. So it was very echoey in there and cold. And he turned on this radio and it was playing through the house, and he had the lights on. So it looked like people were home, but the lights never turned off. So the neighbor's like, what's going on? Why aren't the lights ever turning off? And he also turned the AC or something up high so that the bodies would not decompose as quickly. So maybe the smell wouldn't, you know, alert people, because he wanted enough time to get away, as far away as possible. So that was really interesting. But it's, of course, they don't say, you know, it's John List, or they say it was that house and it wasn't. So, but this, you know, so I was like, oh my God, it's John List. Like, that was my fun moment from the show. That was my best moment from the show, when I was like, oh man, they're not doing that. But I was like, they might as well throw Amityville in there, because the actual Watcher house looks like the Amityville house. It's one of those types, you know, the house with the big windows look like eyeballs, you know, the top, which I hate those. Cause like you guys, I lived in New England when I moved there from California. I was already like way into the Amityville story, and I'm like, oh no, the whole Amityville houses are surrounding me, and I couldn't take it. It was super creepy.
Yeah, what you guys don't know about Esther is that she's the biggest chicken. She literally sits in her office, dark, and researching true crime, Elegant murder, horror. Everything. But if you mention a horror film, she's like, oh, no, like, I can't do that. She does not like horror films. So, yeah, when we were messaging back and forth about The Watcher, she was like, oh, I don't know if I can watch that. And I'm like, it's not that creepy. You got it. You got it.
Not at all. It was actually very entertaining. So, yeah. So what did you guys make it? Did you guys recognize the John List story right away? Did you learn about that later? What did you think about them using that as part of this story?
It stuck out so much during the viewing of, I think this was episode 2 that this happened, that this guy John Graff shows up in the fictionalized show. It kind of stuck out like a sore thumb. It's like, well, why would they include this? This has to be, it was too specific. It had to be real. So I Googled it. I actually thought it was a different case. I didn't know about the John List case until I did my Googling and found out that it was the John List case that they had sort of used in The Watcher. And then it struck me like, oh, they're trying to do like an American Horror Story thing with this show. And maybe they're going to try to do more seasons too, but I don't know. Kind of just fell apart. The case that I thought it was about was this guy, John William McGrath, who also killed his family, but then escaped from a New Hampshire hospital, a mental institution, after killing his mother, father, his two younger brothers with a rifle, one by one. He was sentenced to life, but then he vanished, never to be found again. And this was in 1974. He's still never been found. I have a major problem with the Watcher show not using this case, but then using the John List case. The guy was in jail by the time he would have been there at the house. What are we doing, Watcher?
Well, as you say that, because I don't know about that case, but it sounds to me like it's possible that's what they were going to do. And then they liked the details of the John List case better and use that instead. Possibly. I mean, I don't know.
Could have been maybe a mashup because the name's similar.
It is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was anyone else craving a sandwich after the scene where he made himself a sandwich in the kitchen?
Kinda.
He made that sandwich and I was like, that stole the scene. I was like, that was a good looking sandwich.
And then he didn't want to eat it. What the hell?
He just leaves it.
I'm not really hungry after all. Like, dude, who do you let go into your refrigerator and make a sandwich? When does that ever happen?
Right. Yeah, and who takes it literally, like, oh, help yourself. Okay, I'm gonna make a full-on sandwich. I'm gonna slice some tomatoes, wash some romaine lettuce, and
I'm gonna wash the romaine lettuce. Exactly. Right. Come on. Also, super funny that you mentioned the family being naive, even though they're from New York City, and you know, he's got this high pressure job, and like this guy is the home inspector, and all he does is like touch the hood of the stove and he's like, yeah, this checks out.
Looks good.
Like, you're that naive?
Yeah, wow.
Looking good.
And what was his job? I don't even know what he did. Do you guys know what he did?
In real life, Derek was an accountant of some sort, but I think in the series he was like some type of firm, a lawyer or something.
Because he wanted to make partner. Isn't that such a weak storyline for any family that's falling apart? Like, the dad doesn't make partner. But you're gonna make partner, right?
No, I guess not. Maybe next year.
Yeah, and course he never tells his wife when he should be telling his wife.
Right.
Yeah. And the other thing that I called bullshit on was the fact that she's an artist making these pots or whatever. And then she goes, she just happens to wander into the gallery. Wouldn't you know what's going on with your show? And also she says, oh my God, everything's been sold. First of all, no, that's not going to happen. Second of all, I think that the gallery owner would call you like, oh my God, we sold everything. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, oh yeah, by the way, you sold everything.
Gallery owner would call him just when one thing sells.
Yeah.
Right. Like, hey. Congratulations.
She had to go all the way there on her own to find out randomly.
She's a great artist. You leave her alone.
Oh, probably a wonderful artist. I do love Naomi Watts, though.
Same.
Fantastic. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why I keep calling her Claire Danes at the beginning. I was like, oh, that's Claire Danes. I don't know why I thought Claire Danes. I don't know what happened there.
She's got a Claire Danes look to her.
Yeah.
I thought so. Maybe at the very beginning, I thought she did, but I was like, that's not Claire Danes. What am I thinking?
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
Tim, your second or third wasn't either of mine. So
what? Oh yeah, my gosh.
Like Esther mentioned, I had no idea about the actual John Graff case. But what I was talking about was actually, and I think it was either in the first or second episode as well, when the family was now staying at the motel and the dad was staying back at the house with the call that comes in to the mom.
Which was clever. I'll give him that. That was clever.
But do you guys know about that case?
No.
Okay. Oh. So Esther also did cover this case early on in Once Upon a Crime. To me, as soon as I saw this scene, I was like, oh my God, they got this from this case. There was a family in Washington State where the oldest daughter, I think her name was Courtney, started getting just like random text messages to her phone. And then her phone started texting friends randomly. But then when she would look back at her sent messages, they weren't there. So first just started off with text messages, but then the family started getting calls to their landline and it was from a restricted number. And then when investigators tried to trace the calls, it was coming from their landline. So that actually happened. It was the, how do you say it, Esther? Kuykendall?
Kuykendall case? Was that the Kuykendalls?
Kuykendalls, yeah. In Washington State. Yeah.
When a stranger calls.
Kind of.
These calls are coming from inside the house, yeah.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. And, it was a very, very weird case. And that was in 2007, Washington State.
I was doing a little bit of research on it yesterday, and that was the year that the iPhone came out. And so, cybersecurity wasn't really a thing. And so people were able to hack phones super easy, and especially a teenage girl's cell phone, and then be able to hack onto whatever internet server they had and then onto their landline. But at first, the calls started off not malicious or anything, but by the end of it, it was like, I see what you're doing. I'm going to come into the room here, and really threatening the family. But just like the Watcher case, they never found out after installing security cameras, hiring private investigators. They never figured out who did this to them. So very scary.
That's terrifying to me. See, that's the invasion of privacy that is freaky to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You feel violated almost, especially nowadays. Gosh, we're all on our phones. Could you imagine getting text messages that way? I hate when I get random numbers that I did subscribe to, like, oh, subscribe to this. And it's like, oh, hey, Lorena did it. I'm like, how do you know my name? But I subscribe to it. Stop to opt out. Stop.
Well,
I mean, I get some random text messages sometimes too from weird numbers. Sometimes they say like, hi, just hi, or hi, Tim. And I think it's just spam stuff. They're trying to start a conversation. But what if I wrote back, you know, like where would that go? Could that get creepy? I guess I'm bringing this up because the Woods family, who owned the house before the family that was based on in the Watcher series, they said that they got a letter, one letter, and it wasn't, they didn't really think too much of it, and they just threw it away. So they didn't disclose anything when they sold the house to the Broaddus's. And then the Broaddus's were angry at them afterwards because they didn't think that was true. They thought they must have gotten threatening letters too. Like, what would happen, I guess, is my question. Like, if the Broaddus's just threw the letters away and just moved in, and just said, screw this, you know, I don't care what you're saying, just Watcher.
Rip it up.
Yeah. Would that have,
I don't mean to victim blame, but they are kind of giving them the control in a sense. Like, they could have just moved in, right? I mean, I would be frightened too. Don't get me wrong. And my family would be too.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, in the dramatized version, they're going to take it to the, like, you know, hidden tunnels and satanic rituals and what else did they throw in there that we forgot about?
Yeah.
What are they doing? Really? Just keep it contained. You know, had that show like ended up being about one of those neighbors, no tunnels, no satanic BS, like that could have actually been unnerving throughout the entire series.
Yeah. Pick a monster, right?
Yeah.
Throw all the monsters in.
Was the board the where they're trying to solve, where they had the board with everything up with all of the strings and the pictures and the, I'm like, that is a meme, isn't that a Charlie Day meme? Like,
oh yeah,
yeah.
And it is.
We need to put that up in the studio, Lauren. We need to have a board with strings and tats and pictures. And
enough is enough with the like. The absolute certainty at the end of almost every episode where the private detective is like absolutely certain it's somebody. And then the next episode, it just kind of works itself out. And she's like, no, it's this one. It's like, well, who? Okay. So it's now this person.
But then it's your husband.
Yeah.
That was the worst twist.
Yeah.
I was out. I think I was out at that point because I stopped feeling bad for them. It's like, well, I, you know, you don't deserve my empathy at this point.
Running around, man. Yelling at people. I'm like, wow, that's going to really help.
Right.
So what was the story with the actor guy? Was he actually like telling
that's
the truth?
What I
was
wanted
he
to know.
Yeah,
another
I don't know.
Dangling now... chat of a plot line.
Yeah. Maybe they do have an idea. There's like second seasons in the works of like, follow now the crazy actor guy.
Please no. Don't do it.
No, I'm fine not knowing.
Don't do it.
When he saw the guy on the Viagra commercial or whatever the hell it was, he was like, ah, he's an actor. Then he goes and he finds him, tracks him down. He's like, you're an actor. He's like, yeah, I never said I wasn't, dumbass.
You never asked.
See?
Yeah. Well, no, I thought that storyline was pretty good for a while, but it's possible that both are true, right? That he could have lived at the house and could be an actor, but then they said that he never lived at the house, right? Didn't the detective say that?
Yeah.
Shooter McGavin said that later. Yeah.
Shooter McGavin, yes.
Yeah, it's just those things that just kind of went nowhere, and I guess I don't know what I didn't know what the point of that was.
Some of that stuff works for TV. Like, if you have to actually wait a week and then there's commercials, like that stuff does work on like cable TV where you just forget about storylines. It's fine. I don't care about it. You don't have to tie up that knot. But in binge TV like Netflix, it doesn't work like that.
That's a really good point. I kind of forgot about cable TV and commercials. So, yeah, maybe that it would have been successful in that type of platform, but not on Netflix.
Yeah.
Minor effect.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get that buffer of like that week where you can forget about some things that are, you know, the minor plot points or the minor things that irritated you. But when you have the option to just keep going, it's like you're doing it because it's now like a fun pain. It's like I've already committed to it and it's not bad, but it's like fun to fun to be mad at it.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, kind of hate watch it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we watched it. I'm glad we talked about it because there was a lot to kind of chew on. It's one of those things that you kind of do have to talk about because it's like, wait a minute. Did you guys get this? Did this make any sense to you kind of shows? So that was really cool to do.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you guys do this, but anytime something says like based on a real story, as soon as the movie is done, I'm like Googling like how spot on was that? I watched the Elvis movie recently. And I was like, I need to know what exactly was real. I recently watched King Richard with Serena and Venus Williams. And as soon as it was over, I was like, how much of this was real? And as soon as the watcher, even while I was watching it, I was like, wait, is that what they're going with? And so even before that was done, I already was like, none of this is real. So hopefully this episode will be able to debunk a lot of what they put out there, because other than just the letters, a lot of it wasn't real, so which is really unfortunate.
Why are you trying to kill everybody's
sorry.
like we've been talking about this for almost an hour and we still haven't like brought up a lot of the things that just like were infuriating about it, like Tim, the part where you said you checked out was when
it was when the dad wrote the letter, the reveal when the dad wrote one of the letters. I was like, okay, I'm done.
Like the part that I was like, this isn't, I shouldn't take this seriously anymore, was when the couple next door.
walked back home.
But then they weren't.
They walked back home with their suitcases.
Yeah. Who were the bodies?
That's what
I'm like, this is out of control.
Who died then? Her son? Their son just killed random people and put bodies in there? And we don't even know who those bodies are?
Yeah.
And it was just like, okay. It was just like, okay, that's what happened. Like,
And then they're all friends at the end?
Yeah. Having tea, eating crumpets.
Yeah.
Let's look at that mystery, Ryan Murphy, and not the mystery of the letters that, how about the double murder that took place next door?
Yeah, that nobody mentions again. It's just, it is what it is. Oh my God, that's what I was out. I'm like, come on.
Good twist when they were killed. Yeah, I love it in TV shows when they kill characters because it's like, it keeps me on my toes, It's good. Especially when you like the characters. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then they return from their vacation in Florida and you're like, never mind.
I tell you, Ryan Murphy's got a bucket load of money from Netflix and just threw everything but the kitchen sink in there.
Yeah.
Even the kitchen sink, my God.
And a sandwich.
I mean, I really hope there's another season. If there's another season, I'll probably hold out until like I can't take it anymore. I'm like, okay, I'll give it one episode, see what happens after one episode.
Does he get all of those loose ends? Does he tie them together in a really nice bow, or like, oh man, that was awesome? Or is it like, come on again? We'll have to wait and see, I guess, to see if it even happens. But I want you guys to tell listeners about Crawl Space. You guys do some of this. I know you do interviews and you do talk about things that are happening, more currently and stuff. So what is coming up? What are some of the things that listeners can, enjoy from Crawl Space?
Nothing.
Well, just like the watcher. Okay?
Yeah. You will walk away from it. Learning
with
nothing.
More questions than
with
answers.
More questions.
Well, we recently spoke with Esther, so that episode will be coming out in a couple weeks. Yeah.
Show about nothing.
Yeah. And we have a new series coming out early next year, starting in the first part of next year, in the first few months, probably March, we're thinking. It'll premiere, and it's about the Connecticut River Valley killings that happened between 1978 and 1988 in the region that borders Vermont and New Hampshire, that's divided by the Connecticut River. So this area had a series of murders, and you don't hear about the Connecticut River Valley killer or killers often, but there is information out there. And we're covering that in depth. And our partner, Jen, has been working diligently on putting those episodes together, working with one of the survivors, law enforcement, criminal profiler who worked on it, just a number of people, and making like actual headway on it. And that show is going to be called Dark Valley. And yeah, coming out and probably around March, and pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah. And if it is good enough, then our cohort, Jennifer Mel, will make partner.
She will make partner. Yes.
You
will.
Pass but her yeah, over if it, for the new guy who doesn't meet well, him we'll, at night.
We can't say yet. She's up for partner, but we can't say yet. We don't know how it's going to go.
Jennifer, if you're listening to this, don't buy a house yet.
Yeah, don't buy a house.
That sounds really great. So I'll be looking forward to that.
No, that does sound really interesting. I've never heard of the Connecticut River Killer.
River Valley Killer, yeah. And we're keeping it. We've heard of the first couple of episodes. They're fantastic. And Jen has been keeping it. Jen is working, like I said, with the last surviving victim, as they go into the lives of the other victims, as well as the investigation into who this person is, who was never caught, by the way. So the perpetrator's still out there. The survivor has an incredible story, and they're working on highlighting the other victims that this person or persons were responsible for.
Great. Yep, and the show is called Dark Valley, coming spring 2023.
Cool. Okay. I would say subscribe to Crawl Space so you know that that's coming up, and you can subscribe when that one's ready to go, right?
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah, actually, you can search Dark Valley Podcast, and we have a trailer up.
Thanks so much for coming on, Tim and Lance. And we'll be talking to you guys soon, I'm sure. And I'm sure we'll be seeing you at CrimeCon again. So that should be fun. Can't wait. Okay. All right.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so
we
much.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks. This is fun.
I want to thank Tim and Lance once again for being my guests. We had a great time with Crawl Space and too many laughs to fit into this episode. If you want to hear the complete and uncut version, you can get it on Patreon. If you're not yet a Patreon member, you can join for as little as $2 a month to receive bonus episodes, as well as ad-free episodes that you'll have access to before anyone else. Go to patreon.com/onceuponacrime to find out more and join. We'll be back next week with another special guest and another really fun discussion about a fascinating case. You won't want to miss it, so make sure you subscribe or follow Once Upon a Crime to have access to every episode. Special thanks also to Lorena Garcia for joining me for this episode and for the audio editing. Until next time, be good to one another.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.